जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी माधव कुंज विहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गिरिवर धारी गिरिवर धारी राधा माधव कुंज विहारी राधा माधव कुंज विहारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जयो यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुत पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगन रघुनाथान्वितांस्तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्ण पादा सहगना ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमस्तुते। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि श्री गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद। We are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 21, verses 21 to 23, Prabhu, today? 21 through 24? 19 to 21. Urukrama shabda kahe barojar kram क्रम शब्दे कहे एई पाद विक्षेपन शक्ति कंप परिपाटी जुक्ति शक्त आक्रमण। नेक्स्ट वर्स चरण चालने कापाइलो त्रिभुवन नेक्स्ट वन विष्णुर्नो वीर्य गणनम कतामो अरतिह यः पार्थिवानि अपि कविर्विममे रजांसि चष्कम्बयः स्वरं हंसा खलता त्रिपृष्ठाम् यस्मात्रि शाम्य सदनात् उरुकंपयानम् We can repeat text 19 together. Urukramo, somebody was say. Urukramo shabde kahe barojarakram. Kramo shabde kahe ei pado bikhepan. Urukrama Shabde. By the word Urukram, Kahe, one means Boro, great, Jaro, whose, Krama, step, Krama Shabde. By the word Krama, Kahe, one means Ei, this. Pada Vikhepan, throwing forth of the foot. So I'll just quickly read the translations and the purports, and then we will get back into the core verse. The word Urukrama refers to one whose krama or step is great. The word krama means throwing the foot forward, that is stepping. Krama or krama in Bangla also means power, trembling, a systematic method, argument, and a forcible attack by stepping forward. Thus, Vamana caused the three worlds to tremble. The purport says, Uru means very great and krama means step. When Lord Vamandev was offered three steps of land, he expanded his three steps by covering the entire universe. In this way, the three worlds trembled, and therefore Sri Vamandev, the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, is referred to as Urukrama. The next verse says, even if a learned man is able to count all the minute atoms in this material world, he still cannot count the potencies of Lord Vishnu. In the form of the Vamana incarnation, Lord Vishnu, without hindrance, captured all the planets extending from the root of the material world up to Satyaloka. Indeed, he caused every planetary system to tremble by the force of his steps. Purport says, this is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.40. In the Rig Veda Mantras 1.2.54.1, it is said, Om Vishnur no Viryani Kam Pravocham Yah Parthivani Vimate Rajamsi Yo Askam Bhayad Uttaram Sadastam Vichakramanas Tredhorugaya. The meaning of the verse is practically identical to the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam quoted above. So this is a very technical part of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, but I will try and break it down and make it simple and explain what is going on. But before I go there, I want to give a little historical background that will help us put this book in the right frame and context. You know, when we study a shastra, there are two aspects to it. Shastra is always timeless and timely at the same time. There are some aspects of Shastra which are timeless, that cannot be bound by history. In the Hebrew Shastras, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells his followers, that is us, that do not imagine that the avatars of the Lord only come in India. If you look at the avatars of the Lord, Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Nishimha, Vamana, Parashurama, Rama, Balarama, Buddha, Kalki, they are all appearing in India. So some people might think, oh, India is special because avatars only choose India. God cannot appear outside India. That India is special, of course India is special. Bharat is very special, but that becomes a matter of what is called chauvinism. That means excessive pride in one's heritage to the extent one misses the actual spiritual point. It can happen. So there are some aspects of Shastra which are timely and yet timeless. The timeless aspects are the spiritual aspects. The timely aspects is how it is relevant in one's context. And yet, Shastras appear in time even though they are apaurusheya. What is apaurusheya? Purusha means person. Right? Like right now I am sitting here, you are hearing. You know, there is a personal exchange. But the Vedas are supposed to be apaurusheya. It does not have a human origin. Great sages like Agastya, Vishwamitra, and so many others, they meditated on reality, and when they realized something, they found patterns and they shared it with the world. And the first thing that got shared with the world is called Gayatri. How many of us have heard of Gayatri? Gayatri. What is Gayatri? Gayatri is the first meter of the Vedas. And here is how the teachings of the Vedas are both timely and timeless. It is both timely and... Thank you. Everything that is written in the Vedas is in some kind of poetry. And whenever you are talking in poetry, you exit normal human language. Normal human language is prosaic. See, I am talking in sentences. You can type it down, edit, and turn it into a prose piece. But poetry is not like prose. Poetry has a certain rhythm. It is inspired. And the third most important aspect of poetry is it is actually never literal. It is always indicating to something besides itself. Right? So, how many of us have heard of the American poet Walt Whitman? Walt Whitman? I had to read it when I was in 6th, 7th grade in a school in India. Very famous poet. And he says, "Oh captain, my captain, our fearful trip is done." Have you heard of that poem? Okay, is that poem about a captain? No. It is about Abraham Lincoln. But he uses something called a metaphor. By talking about a ship that is sailed a very long and dangerous journey and has come to a point where it is almost at the shore and the captain is dead before it reaches the shore. The poem is about the murder of Abraham Lincoln. But it doesn't say that directly. It says, oh captain, my captain, our fearful trip is done. Right? It's never about what the words are saying. It's always deeper. That's the beauty of poetry. Right? In this chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we get a glimpse of how complicated Sanskrit poetry can be. And Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is explaining to us through these verses and the example that we are studying today that it is never to be accepted at a surface level. Good poetry is always multi-layered. Always multi-layered. And what is the proof? What is the example? Even one word of Srimad Bhagavatam, Atma Ramasya Munayo, right? It has, you know, in a short conversation, for those who are experts, they can show you at least 64 meanings of one word. And that is what poetry does. It talks about a reality not in ordinary human language. It talks about reality in a rhythmic language. It never just is what looks at the surface. right? And it is always inspired. Poetry is always inspired. Always inspired. So what is the, we have, you know, basically understood how poetry works. Now, what is the purpose of poetry? And I will try to explain it with the idea of the Gayatri. Because every shastra we study is essentially an expansion of the Gayatri. Okay? Here is how it works. And here is why shastras, especially Vedas, are both timely and timeless. I want to do a little experiment here. You're ready for a little ancient Indian experiment? Ancient Indian experiment? Okay. Let's do it. Thank you. When we begin our education in a school system today, what do we start with? A, B, C, D, R, E, E, something, the alphabets, right? In the Vedic system, you do not begin with the alphabets. You begin with poetry and mathematics fused together. You know how? You know how? I'll show you how. The first most important mantra of the Vedas is Om Bhur Bhuvaswa. Right? And what does that mean? It can mean so many things. At a very surface level, Bhu is what you're sitting on, earth. This is what grounds you. Bhuva, you look up and you see the skies. And then, when you have intelligence, you know that the skies are not the limit. It's beyond the skies. There is something. Because at night you can see the stars and the moon. Only during day the stars and the moon are invisible. Om Bhurbhuvasva. Tat, tat in Sanskrit is that in English. They are related. Tat Savitur. Savitur is the sun deity. Varenyam. That sun deity that illuminates the earth, skies and beyond. I bow down, I respect, I honor that deity. May dhiyo yonaha prachodayat. May that Savitur give us intelligence. Okay, that is only the surface meaning. Here is what's happening. The way you count the Gayatri is not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There is a way to count the Gayatri. Right? And it's called a mudra. You start here, 1. Those who are Brahmin initiated know this. But I'm just showing you how they counted in the ancient world. You start 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You see, if you go move the fingers around how you count, you will create a spiral. You'll create a spiral on your fingers. Okay? Now here is the thought experiment. Where else do you see the spiral? Fibonacci. Thank you, Fibonacci series. Science. Where else do you see the spiral on? Do you see a spiral on the altar? Shaligram Shila. The Shaligram Shila has it's a spiral. Not in this altar, but I'm talking about there are Shaligram Shilas in many altars. So essentially, that spiral is an indication that the universe is constantly expanding. That's what the Fibonacci series points out. How many of us have never heard of the Fibonacci series? It's okay, you can share. Fibonacci series is a series of numbers. It starts with zero. And the progression is, whatever the number is, you add the one before. And only in the first three, you need to do something, right? So zero, one, so then you add zero plus one, that is one. Then you add one plus two, that is three. Then you add three plus two, that is five, right? And then you add five plus three, that is eight. And in this way, the number keeps progressing. And it is an infinite series of numbers. Someone called Fibonacci found the pattern, and in the modern era, that series of numbers became named after this particular mathematician. But the Gayatri points to the same principle as the Fibonacci series. How? The Gayatri is the first mantra that expands into other mantras, right? Bhur Bhavasva Tatsavitur Varenyam, which essentially points to a rhythm, not just the words. You know, we're talking about how poetry is always there in rhythm. Gayatri is a chanda. The mantra is an example of that chanda. What we are meditating on is a pattern in poetry when we meditate on the Gayatri. That is how education begins in ancient India. You are given a mantra, you keep chanting it, and as you grow, you are shown how this works in mathematics and in poetry. In this way, the human brain develops in a much more complex way than to think of just alphabets and numbers, and now let's combine alphabets and numbers. That creates linear thinking. The Vedic system of education creates a multi-dimensional lateral thinking. You're not thinking just in, you know, black and white anymore. You can see the complexity of nature. You can understand the complexity of mathematics. You can understand the complexity of poetry. Then you learn yajna, which is ritual. Then you learn Vedangas, which is archery or medicine or something depending on your proclivities. And then if you keep on your education, especially if you are a woman, you learn 64 arts. That is the original Vedic curriculum. When you go through this kind of training, you understand the subtleties of poetry. And this chapter in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is pointing out to the subtlety of poetry available in Srimad Bhagavatam. Why is Srimad Bhagavatam considered the golden yardstick of poetry? And not because it is studied just in ISKCON temples or Vaishnava circles. Dvadashe Bhagavata Pariksha. No matter what discipline of knowledge you are getting trained in, whether it is medicine, whether it's astronomy, whether it is, you know, Alamkara, which is, you know, rhetoric and whatever you are studying, at the end of 12 years, your teachers will give you a section of the Bhagavatam and say, explain this. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate examination given to Sanskrit pandits, you know, if they are to be called a good scholar. Because no other Shastra matches the kind of poetic complexity and beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam. For those of us who do not know the language, it might look very alien, and this might look very technical, but those who enjoy poetry and understand the language, you know, this is like ecstasy, right? So I wanted to pause here. I can't see the clock. Does somebody know what time it is? Okay, we have a few more minutes. I wanted to kind of pause here and open up the rest of our morning session to be more conversational. You can ask questions and I'll respond by referring to the core ideas of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then we will go to the class ends at 9:45 or 9, okay. Can we have the microphone to Prabhu, please?
So, you were making the point that all the that when you learn how to speak, or
when you learn how to speak.
How to speak? What is it? The Vedic.
Sanskrit,
yeah. You're connecting that, saying that ultimately the Srimad Bhagavatam is the number one or most important thing to learn. And it it's connected.
Yes. Nigama kalpa tarura galitam phalam sukha mukhad amrita dravasam yutam srimad bhagavata rasamalayam muhu raho rasika bhuvi bhavukah. It's one of the Mangalacharana verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nigama means the entire collection of the Vedas. Okay? You look at such beautiful forests on our property here. So many trees. Do you see bees attracted to leaves or branches or roots? Or bees go straight for the? And if there is a fruit that comes after the flower, the bees go straight for the? So nigama is like a tree. Kalpataru, a wish-fulfilling tree. And galitam phalam means the fruit that has become mature and ripe. So Vedic literatures in its maturity is the Bhagavata. Vedas take time to mature. If you go to the Vedas, not everything you find there is very mature. You find passages like, you know, not exactly, I'm paraphrasing, that dear Indra, give me this and I will give you that. That's not love, that's transaction. That's bargaining. Srimad Bhagavatam gets to the point of what is love? What does it mean to have a shared purpose of humanity? Where did dharma go after Sri Krishna, who was the protector and the, you know, the upholder of dharma? After he departed, where did dharma go? Those are the questions Srimad Bhagavatam asks. Thank you. Shesha Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Different schools of thought, Vedic schools of thought, come to different conclusions.
Yes.
Is there a final arbiter who's going to...
Is there a what?
Final arbiter.
Final arbiter.
That says this is the...
This is such a beautiful and mature question. Is there a final... Vedic schools of thought give so many different opinions. Is there a final arbiter saying, okay, this is it? Can I give an answer from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur? He says, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there are so many schools of Vedas, and there is a proverb in Bangla called Nana Muni Nana Mat. If you are a great sage scholar, you are going to have your own opinion that differs from others. And diversity of thought is a good thing. There are two schools of thinking in ancient India. One is called Astika, the other is called Nastika. Astika school of thought means we accept. Today it is translated as theist and atheist, but that is not the correct translation. Astika means I accept the validity of the Vedas. And Nastika means we don't accept the validity of the Vedas. Only in the 19th century, the word Nastika became atheist. The question whether God exists or not is not a major question in the Vedic tradition. There are six Astika schools paired up with each other. The first is called the school of Mimamsa. Mimamsa means if you continue doing the rituals properly, everything will be all right. Do your yajna. Do your charity, follow Varnashram Dharma, and you will be okay. Okay, that's called Mimamsa. Along with Mimamsa comes Vedanta. Vedanta says, but hey, are you getting the point? There is all of these Vedas, Veda Anta. Anta means end, like antenna, anterior means end. Veda Anta, Vedanta, these schools, two schools. Then there is Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Nyaya, very simply put, is logic. Vaisheshika means atomism, that everything is made of atoms. In a sense, modern chemistry and physics is a version of Vaisheshika. Right? Then Sankhya and Yoga. Sankhya means enumeration. Okay, let us understand the world in terms of categories. And Yoga is what is the inner discipline that will lead me to freedom once I have understood the categories. Out of the six schools, Astika schools that follow the Vedas, five do not directly talk about Ishvara. Ishvara means a personality of Godhead. Okay? Vedanta talks about Brahman. Not really personality till our Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya and Nimbarkacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vallabhacharya. So many others point out Bhagavan is Brahman. But Vedanta Sutra keeps it very broad. Mimamsa talks about Apaurusheya. Nyaya and Vaisheshika don't involve themselves too much with the question of God. And Sankhya originally is also pointed out as a non-theistic, in the sense, Nirishwara Vadin theology. Only Yoga has Ishvara. And so all of these opinions differ with each other, like Shesha Prabhu said. However, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that at the end of the day, with yukti, yukti means logic, it is naturally your intellect will flow in different directions and they will contradict each other. There is no way, no way you can have a congruent, harmonious view except through the second category called ruchi. Ruchi means taste. Ruchi is the basis of rasa. Says, we accept spiritual life ultimately on the basis of ruchi, our taste, not yukti, not logic. And so, what is, like, this is it? Well, the ruchi of that person will decide it. And our souls are hardwired in such a way that our ruchi will take us to different things and make us do different things at different times, but we will always be dissatisfied. Because no amount of choosing anything other than Krishna can actually fulfill the craving of one's ruchi. Therefore, brahmando bhrumite kono bhagyavan jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Some wandering soul. You know, the idea is we are always wandering in this universe. In this lifetime, we have 80, 90 years. Somebody turned 80 years. Maharaj Prabhu, today morning, we heard the announcement. When I speak to my parents, they crib about old age. They don't like being old. They miss being young. I am middle-aged. I also miss being young now. And somebody tells me it's either uphill or downhill from here. This is a trailer to old age. Right? We experience this. We experience things we don't necessarily like. When we have youth and the body is ready for a lot of enjoyment, there is the money, usually. When you get the money, you lose your health. So there is never a win-win situation in this world, right? And after this lifetime, if you look into the night sky, we you know, just intuitively we can infer that this universe is teeming with life. This universe is teeming with life. We can't be the only ones here. Impossible. Just on this planet, there are more bugs than humans. You look around, there are more birds and bees and all kinds of animals than humans. We are a small species. Our problem is we think we are the boss. And I am teaching a course called Religions of the World for my students. And I will conclude your answer, Shesha Prabhu, with this example. And then we'll open to other questions. In my class, I offered my students a challenge. I asked them to find out, what do we call ourselves as a species? What do we call ourselves as a species? Can anybody answer? Humans is the common English slang. You know you are close but not correct. You're close but not correct. We used to call ourselves Homo sapiens. Now do you know what we call ourselves? The scientific term? Homo sapiens sapiens. Two times. You know what sapiens means? Wise. The humans that are monkeys that are wise, wise monkeys. We didn't stop in calling ourselves wise once. Scientists have called our species wise twice. Wise, wise monkeys. On what basis? Well, we could send a machine to a moon and Mars. We figured out ways to battle diseases that would have otherwise killed our ancestors. We can go to a hospital and, you know, elongate our lifespan. We have invented technology that protects us from nature, that helps us scale food. There are three things that has, you know, decimated populations in the past. Wars, okay? And then like pandemics or epidemics. And we have also brought upon ourselves all kinds of difficult situations where our economies collapse and, you know, when a famine occurs. You know, sometimes the climate change or something happens, a particular year, rain does not come, and there is famine. Humans have died in large numbers because of these three things. Wars. Yeah, natural disasters. But, you know, famine is kind of a natural disaster, but it's the most pervasive kind of natural disaster. That's there. Those are more like accidents. Famines happen. Absolutely, absolutely. I'm saying that we humans have invented systems by which we can reduce the amount of suffering caused by these things. And therefore, we have called ourselves wise, wise humans. And this is what I ask our students. Like, do you think we as a species deserve to call ourselves wise, wise humans? Look at us. Look at us. It is so vain and conceited. And you know, there is a saying, pride comes before a disaster and arrogance before a fall. Every time we have suffered is because we as humanity have called ourselves, we are the strongest. And therefore, I have proposed to my students that, you know, we are just a few of us in a classroom, but I am going to give you a radical idea. And this idea is based on the Srimad Bhagavatam. They don't know, but if they hear this lecture, they will come to know. I said, I think we should rename our species Homo significans. Is the Latin word that we are a species that is always looking for meaning and significance. We are looking for significance. You know, if you keep a person without their water supply, they will last for 7 days, 10 days. They will, you know, torture his death. If you take away someone's air supply, how long will they live? Few minutes. If you take away significance, if you take away meaning from their lives, if somebody feels, I am not loved, I am not wanted, they will go and kill themselves. I'm a university professor. I served as a dean for 2 years. Now I'm I've been awarded a distinguished professorship, whatever that means. But there is one thing that concerns me to every campus I go. I see students in so much stress. So many students in India commit suicide. Students commit suicide, young people with entire lives ahead of them. They feel that if they cannot crack this exam, it is better to jump in front of a running train on a railway track. They think it's okay to buy rat poison and swallow it. If anybody is thinking like that, don't. It is not worth it. Human life has inherent meaning. with all our wisdom, if you have come to a system where an examination result is going to kill you, that education is not worth it. And I'm saying this as a professor. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jarobidya jato mayaro vaibhav tomaro bhajane badha moho janomiya anitya sansare jibe karoe gadha. Gadha means donkey. In India, you know, here of course donkeys have very high status, but in India, donkeys are considered to be not very intelligent animals. Why? Because they are constantly bearing other people's burdens. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, Jarobidya jato, all of your materialistic education, mayar vaibhav, is a wealth of illusion. Jibe karoe gadha makes, turns a human into an ass. Your education turns you into an ass. And I ask my students one very simple question, that, hey, if you did not have your college degree, would you find yourself some work? I said, yes. But now that you have a college degree, will you accept any work that comes to you? They said, no. I said, therefore, see, isn't your education directly linked to your unemployment, unless you fly in employment? Education, I'll hold on, if I may finish my thought. Education trains us in specific skills that can make us highly employable and make more money than others. And I'm not bashing education here. I am saying education without the capacity to think, without the capacity to be compassionate, without the capacity to be honest, without the capacity to learn how to serve is incomplete education. That education is going to come back and bite you. When that education or that kind of education goes very far, you have people calling ourselves humans or the monkeys that are very, very wise, and yet we create nuclear bombs and we point them at each other and we are ready to fire weapons of mass distraction and mass destruction at the slightest provocation. And this is where Krishna book begins. We are approaching Janmashtami, and I'll conclude with this. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam begins that once upon a time the world was overburdened by rogues dressed up as kings, armed to the teeth, who were willing to kill each other and their armies and their civilians and their populations at the slightest provocation. And in this situation, Mother Earth was crying in distress, and she approached her creator and said, "What do I do?" And the creator assured her, not exactly in this verse, but I'm bringing all the text together and paraphrasing. Whenever and wherever there is a decline of dharma and a rise of adharma, the Lord manifests. The Lord manifests. To protect the virtuous and to destroy the vicious, the diabolical. And this happens time and again in different contexts, places, and situations. Right? So, to go back, humanity has a shared purpose. Not everybody might agree with it, but at least they should give a chance and hear the ideas of the Srimad Bhagavatam and this verse, this kind of purport, this chapter points to the complexity of thought available in this book that leads us to our human potential and flourishing. This is what Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita does. Shows us human potential and flourishing. How the title itself, Sri Chaitanya Charita Amrita, is an answer to that. And I'll conclude with this. Amrita means immortal. Amrita also means nectarian, beautiful, like, you know, intoxicatingly beautiful. Charita has two meanings. Charita means a life story. But Charita also means character. And Chaitanya also has two meanings. Chaitanya means Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's talking about the person. But Chaitanya also means consciousness. All of us in this room are conscious. If you were unconscious, you would be in a hospital. So your consciousness, Chaitanya, has a charita, has a nature. In mrita consciousness, you know, look at the floor. The floor is mrita. It's not alive. It behaves in a certain way. It is inert. But when your consciousness experiences deathlessness, amrita, mrita means dead. Mrita also means clay. Amrita means when you are able to experience deathlessness, immortality, what your consciousness does is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. The nature of consciousness in immortality. What is the potential of your consciousness when it experiences deathlessness? You will never die. You're not this body. Then your consciousness starts behaving in a different way. And at the same time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the ideal example of the highest level consciousness can reach, which is Mahabhava at the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That has to be understood through ruchi and not yukti. Okay, that was Bhagavatam class part 2. Thank you, Shri Prabhu. Yes. What time is it? We have 7 minutes. There is a clock usually on that side, no? They are painting it, that's why they removed it.
Maybe they put new
battery in it. Huh? Maybe they put new battery in it. Oh, but I can't. Okay, that's why I can't see the clock. There are, I think, a lot of listeners online, so if you take the microphone, they will be able to hear your question.
When you were mentioning that there's always going to be conflict, there's like the demons, for example, are always...
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
The demons are always trying to, it's in one way or another, you know, lord it over the material energy.
Isn't that true? I mean, we talk about Satya Yoga, everything was fine and beautiful, but in Satya Yoga there was Hiranyakashipu, Hiranaksha.
Yeah. So you were saying that there was always going to be that, like, in time and since, like, you know, time and immemorial, Krishna, he always comes and then he destroys the demons. But there's always going to be that, you know, those that conflict between.
Yes.
So how is it ever going to be a time when...
Huh?
When is there ever going to be a time when there's going to be like... It's going to be the Vaishnavas who are going to have the advantage over the demons?
Vaishnavas have advantage for, you know, whenever avatars appear and they support an avatar.
I mean, like in this material world, because it always seems like we're behind and they're always...
It is the nature of the... Like, you know, our houses get dirty, we have to clean it. It's recurring. So the material world gets dirty. It has to be cleaned.
I mean, in terms of like that they're in charge in this material world, and they're the ones who are... They're the ones who have the most influence and the most money and the most...
It happens.
Like, so how will the devotees ever be able to conquer over...
Dharmic governance has happened in history. Srimad Bhagavatam is a testimony to that. Prithu Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Lord Ramchandra, Yudhishthir Maharaj. These were periods that are considered golden periods of Bharat's history. And so it's not that, you know, those periods don't come, but nothing in this world is forever. And so those periods come and they go away. The best we can do is keep a memory of that and reinstate it as much as possible.
Does that mean that things are going to keep getting worse and worse and worse before they get better?
Because it's a cycle.
It seems like that's what's happening.
It's a cycle. You know, things get worse, avatar appears, things get reset, some good time, and then things begin to get worse. In this way, cycles keep going in circles. Thank you. Yes. Can Mataji get the microphone, please?
I was going to say this is Kali Yuga, right? And it's not going to get that much better. We're in a golden age where it'll improve spiritually, but Prabhupada said it kind of polarized with the demoniac and then the pious. Right, correct?
Yeah, it is. there are cycles of history, and we are living in a particular cycle. That's the vision Srimad Bhagavatam gives us. Kali Yuga is also the shortest. And in a way, because things are difficult, the processes are easy. You know, if a ship is sinking, then emergency protocols are invoked. What is the emergency protocol of this age? Harer nama, harer nama, harer namaiva kevalam, kalau nastyeva, 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 gatiranyatha. Madhuram madhurebhyopi, mangalebhyopi mangalam. Pavanam pavanebhyopi, harer namaiva kevalam. Just by recitation, the memorization, chanting, meditation on the name, whatever you may achieve in doing other processes, just by the name itself. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, Jivedaya Harinam Sarva Dharma Sar. The essence of all dharma is compassion for other living entities and the chanting of the holy names. But that's it.
And also, we don't measure, Vaishnavas don't measure their success by how much fame or how much money they have. They measure it on Vajravegam and how we're able to...
Those are very flaky parameters of success.
Yeah.
Very flaky parameters. You know, somebody today, you can be very rich, tomorrow you can be very poor, day after you can be very rich again. You know, today you may be very healthy, tomorrow you may be sick, and day after you may be healthy again. There is no... You know, there is not a single point in time anything is stable in this world. Sorry, Prabhu has a question. We have 1 minute. Sorry, can you be loud? People have power. Yes, you're talking about people. People who are adharmic have control over things. That's what you're pointing to?
Yeah.
Sthitadi Muni Prabhu has a question.
Yeah.
We should stop at 9 a.m.
They don't have control over anything. It's an illusionary
system. Lot of people have a control over a lot of things, but they don't have control over their own self.
Their power comes to them from far beyond.
You have 15 seconds. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much.